Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journals. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome to Soul Sister Thursday. This is Maria DiGiovanni, and I want to welcome you to Soul Sister Radio. And here we are on Thursday with Suddenly Homeless with Kate Murphy. Kate, are you there with us?
I'm here.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good. Take it away.
Okay, well, last time we talked about the process of becoming homeless, and I wanted to follow up with the process of becoming unhomeless because it was completely uncharted territory for me. And that's when you really find out what you're made of, because you have to make a decision. Am I going to fight this, or am I just going to let this bulldozer roll over me? And that was a difficult choice to have to make, because I really did have to fight. It's one day after the other. You just have to put one foot in front of the other and say, I'm going to do this one more day, and I'm going to keep going. And the only reason I was able to get out of it when a lot of people can't is because I had my children and I knew I needed them back. So that's what motivated me. So I was homeless, separated from all my children, and ended up couch surfing and sleeping in awkward places, abandoned buildings and a machine shop and a house under construction, just places I never thought I would find myself. And after a while, maybe a month or so, I ended up at a little church that had a Bible study and breakfast every morning, and that became my headquarters. And from there, the pastor opened up a room for me, and I became a resident at that church. I was the first one, and then I brought in some other homeless women also. And it was really a blessing. And the funny thing is, I live in a pretty wealthy community now. The community I lived in then was fairly well off, too. But all the well-off, the wealthy churches really didn't help me. It was a tiny little church with 25 people on a Sunday. And yet, they're the ones that fed the homeless every day, and they're the ones that took me and other homeless women in when we didn't have anywhere to go. And that really spoke volumes to me, and I wanted to be a part of what they were doing there. So I lived there for 10 months. I lived side by side with people who normally were very frightening to me. They were there mentally ill, they were addicts and alcoholics, and sometimes they were all of the above. And I wasn't equipped to deal with those kind of people. But the first time I stepped foot in there to eat breakfast and sit through a Bible study, the Lord said to me, don't judge these people. You don't know if you were in their circumstances with their weaknesses and their background. You don't know if you would have made the same decision. You might have. And there, but for the grace of God, could you be right now? And I knew that was true. So I had to learn to shut off the judgment. And it was really difficult for me because I was from the school that said, hey, if you're drinking or doing drugs, it's your fault that you're homeless. And, yes, there is absolutely some truth to that. But the fact is that once you're there, the reason people do those things isn't because they're having a good time. It's to usually to numb some pain or self-medicate a mental illness or physical illness. And so there they are. And once they get there, they can't find their way out. They need somebody to give them a hand and pull them up. And that's why the Lord sent me to that particular little church. I became a licensed minister taught Bible studies there, lived side by side with these other people for over 10 months, and just he put a love in my heart that was not there before. Just the ability to love people where they are and encourage them to move up to a higher level. That's what he built in me through that 10 months. But then it came to a point where I woke up one day and I said, you know what, I'm comfortable, I'm safe, but I'm no closer to getting my children than I was 10 months ago, and time is running out. Because you're on a clock. As soon as you lose custody of your kids, which had happened to me through becoming homeless, then the clock ticks and you only have so much time to get them back or you lose them. So I had to make some hard decisions. I had to leave that safe little place, and I didn't know where to go. But actually, a complete stranger, within a couple weeks of leaving there, a complete stranger took me in. She had just read some things that I had written about my walk with the Lord, and she realized that she lived close to me. So she was a widow with a beautiful five-bedroom house and no children, and so she emailed me and said, come see my house. I went to her house on a Wednesday in January, exactly a year from when I became homeless. Beautiful house. And it was a Wednesday night, I remember it really clearly, and she said, well, how about you come and stay with me at my house? Because nobody's living here. It's a beautiful house. I've got plenty of room. What do you think? And I was totally shocked. Nobody had ever made, not even my own family, had made that kind of offer. And I said, well, yeah, maybe, but I need to get my girls back. Because it was 2 days after that. On that Friday, I had to go to court to try to get my two oldest girls back. It had been a year, and I was in a little bit of trouble there, and I could have lost them to guardianship. So I said, well, what about my girls? And she said, I'll tell you what, I will go to court with you on Friday. I'll talk to the judge and say, this lady can stay with me as long as she needs to with her two girls. So that was kind of my golden ticket at that moment. I went to court with her that Friday, and she told the judge that, and they said, great, here's your girls, take them home. And it was amazing, and it was a blessing. So we're living in this, I go from this ratty little, well, not ratty church, but it was a really old, tiny church living with totally homeless women to this beautiful, basically, mansion in a really nice area, gated community. So here I am living in this mansion with my two girls. And again, 2 months later, I'm thinking, wow, I'm comfortable, but I can't get my other kids back here. I still have other kids that I have to get out of the system, so what do I do? And I knew I had to step out of my comfort zone again, go into what seemed like uncharted, dangerous territory, and go into the shelter system. So I took my two girls, and we went to stay at a 30-day emergency shelter because they also had a 6-month transitional program. And they encouraged me to come in and said, after 30 days, if we have a transitional bed, you can have it. So I thought, well, maybe this is my ticket. So I went there for 30 days, and it was really one of the hardest experiences of the whole homeless thing. I had my precious teenage girls with me, and the place was dirty. The mattresses were lumpy. They probably hadn't been replaced in 10 years. And there were wall-to-wall bunk beds. There were 17 of us in two bedrooms with two bathrooms, and only one of those bathrooms had a shower. And each bathroom only had one toilet. So here you got 17 people. We had a couple with a baby that cried all night, little boys, teenage boys, my teenage girls. It was horrible, honestly. It was scary. But yet God opened that door for me, and I went through it because I felt like it was a step that I had to take. It wasn't an easy step, but it was going to lead to something else. Well, my 30 days came, and the case manager said, well, I'm sorry, we just don't have anything for you. You're going to have to find another place. So I called the lady that took us in before and said, I'm so sorry, but can we just come stay with you for a couple weeks while I try to figure out what to do? And she said, of course, you're welcome. So we went back to the mansion, and it happened that about a week later that my name had came up on a list that I'd been on for 4 months. It was a shelter in Anaheim, and they said, yes, come up here. We will take you. We'll take you in with two kids, and we'll help you get as many back as you can get. So that was a huge blessing. It was not a great place. It was basically a 1.5-bedroom apartment. The second bedroom was about the size of a walk-in closet. It had just enough room for a bunk bed. So wow. I was there, and over the months, going to court and working with the case manager and the social worker, I was able to get six children back. And it was six children that I was able to get back at that point. And then my 6 months ran out. It was a 6 to 9 month program. So I got them to extend me to 9 months. 9 months came. I got a job, lost the job, got another job. It just wasn't working out the way I thought. So it seemed like I was kind of caught in a loop. And then I reached the point where it was the two-year mark for my little girls to be in, and they were, I hadn't gotten them back yet. At that point, I had two teenage boys and two teenage girls. I had to go to court for my two youngest girls, who were at that time probably about 3 and 5 or 4, maybe. Yeah, I think they're about 3 and 5 at that point. And the whole idea, the whole purpose behind that hearing, and here I am living in this ratty little one-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bedroom shelter in a gang territory in Anaheim. I was making $8 an hour selling timeshares, and I was really bad at it. So I had only gotten 2 commissions. A commission was $100. I'd only gotten 2 of those in, like, the 6 months I worked there. So it did not look good, and I was trying to support these 4 other kids, and now it was time to get my 2 youngest girls out of the system, or they'd go up for adoption. Their foster mom wanted to keep them. She wanted to be their adopted mother, and I would have lost all my parental rights. So when I went to court that day...
Can I stop you there? Let me stop. Don't forget where you are. But I got to have a question for you.
Okay.
How, as a mother, what is your first thought when you think somebody else can just take your kid and adopt them like that?
Well, it was so terrifying to me.
That may be a whole different show.
Yeah, it's totally your worst. First of all, you think your worst nightmare is that your kids will be taken away. That's bad enough. But then when you find out that if they're under a certain age, they can be adopted out from under you if you don't get your act together in time, that was like just so frightening. And the system is so big and so scary, and you feel totally helpless. And that's how it felt to me. Like, they could steal my little girls from me, who I love dearly, and I want them back. But for some reason, the social worker had decided that I needed to get these 4 other kids back first. It was her decision and the court's decision, not mine. But then I ran out of time on the younger ones. The older ones don't necessarily go up for adoption as quickly. It's basically age-based. So if they're young enough, for some reason, at that time anyway, in 2005 or so, the policy was if the kids were under a certain age, I think it was like 5, they would put them up for adoption within a year if you didn't, or maybe it was 2 years if you don't get them back. So that's the situation I was in.
Wow. And, I think that we should do a whole show on that alone. So I'm going to put that down in the calendar and go ahead. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
Okay, so it was a really fateful day for me because when I went into court, it did not look good. Here I am making minimum wage. I'm living in a shelter. I've already got 4 kids and myself crammed into 1.5 bedrooms in a very bad area. And the social worker knew where I was. She had interviewed me, my case manager, the foster mom who wanted to adopt my little girls. Everybody had a say in what was going on. The social worker interviewed everybody that was anybody, my family members of the potential adoptive mother that was the foster mom, everybody. And like I always say, it's frightening because that family court is the only court that I know of where hearsay is accepted as valid evidence. So you can get secondhand people's opinions and it's considered valid against you. Very difficult situation to be in. And it's like a regular court hearing. You can't defend yourself. You just have to sit there and listen to what all these people are saying. You get a chance to speak, but it's pretty hard to, you know, undo all the bad stuff that people have said about you for the last hour before that. So that's the situation I walked into that afternoon. And as I'm sitting there listening to the social worker reading all these reports, at one point she said to the judge, well, I don't recommend sending these 2 girls home to their mother because she has these 4 other kids. I don't think we should send the girls home. And that wasn't fair to me because she was the one that made the decision to send the other 4 kids home first. You know what I'm saying? So it felt like I'd been kind of backstabbed on that whole thing.
Right.
And I'm watching, and I could see the judge was actually a commissioner in that case, and I could see his face. He was getting more and more frustrated with the social worker, with the attorneys on both sides. It was actually attorneys for my girls. There was a public defender for me, and then there's an attorney that represents social services. All those people are in there, and they're and my ex-husband's attorney was in there too. They're all in there with giving their 2 cents worth, putting in their opinion about how it should go. And it was not looking good for me. And I was sitting there in the front row where you have to sit and just listen and praying silently. And I said, Lord, if you don't do something, I'm going to lose these girls because I look really bad in this circumstance. The adoptive potentially adoptive mother, the foster mother. She has a really good paying job, probably a six-figure job, but if not, probably high 80s, low 90s job, $90,000 a year. She lives in a five-bedroom house with a swimming pool. She had put the kids in a Christian school. She just looked awesome on paper. I couldn't compete, and I knew it. And at one point, I said, Lord, if you don't do something, it's over. I'm going to lose my girls. Well, then it was my turn to be up there and be questioned by the judge and all the attorneys. And it's the attorney that supposedly was appointed by the court to represent my little girls. I could see it in her eyes. She looked like Malibu Barbie. She had a designer suit. She had jewelry, diamonds everywhere, long blonde hair, very pretty. But she had the coldest look on her face, like she thought I was gum under her shoe. I did not deserve to get my girls back. That's what I could see in her face. It wasn't about, well, in her mind, what was best for my little girls was that they would be adopted out from under me. I was a complete loser because I was in a shelter. That was pretty much her opinion of me. So she began questioning me. And she said, so how are you going to support these girls? How much are you making? And where are you living? And, you know, as I'm answering these questions, I'm thinking, wow, I'm making $8.50 an hour. I'm selling timeshares. I live in a shelter. I can't win this, Lord. I can't win this. And it was so funny because all of a sudden the judge interrupted the attorney and said, look, I see what you're trying to do here, but the question isn't about how much she makes or how she's going to support these girls. California law clearly states that unless these children are in imminent danger, they must be returned to their parent. And you know what? Just like that, it was over. It just took one word from the judge, and the whole thing was over. They sent my girls home with me that very same day. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, Lord, this has to be you because it makes no sense at all. I mean, why would they give me back my girls? Because if I were the judge, I would have said, send those girls to the parent with most money. But that's not what it was. And I just felt like I saw his face change, and then he said those words coming out of his mouth, and I knew that God had just made the pendulum swing in my favor. Didn't matter that it didn't make any logical sense. It just, God gave me favor with that judge. God totally gave me favor. I couldn't even believe it because I really thought it wasn't going to work for me. So it wasn't my faith. It was totally just the grace of God. So I left there with my little girls. And then there I was, the six kids living in that shelter. Well, I kept looking for a job because obviously $8.50 is not going to get me out of that shelter. I went past my six-month deadline to get out. Then I went till 9 months, and they said, now you need to get out. We never go past 9 months. I ended up staying there a year, exactly a year after I went in there. Nine months after I went in there, I actually did find a job working for a nonprofit that runs the database that all the shelters put their clients in. So my job is to go to all the shelters in Orange County and teach the employees how to use this database. And it was amazing. So I'm living in a shelter in Anaheim, and I'm going to all these other shelters and teaching these case managers how to put their data in. Really good look at what all the shelter programs are and what the requirements are and how they work. And I'm thinking, wow, if I had to rely on any of you people, I never would have made it into your program, much less graduated. So it's a pretty tough system out there. It's a really high bar to get into a shelter, and it's pretty difficult to be successful in one. It would have been very hard for me to succeed in any of those programs. So the fact that God got me out the other side is amazing. So 3 months into that job, I did finally graduate from that shelter. I actually had to go to I was making $20 an hour, and by then I had seven kids with me, and I went to an affordable housing organization that I wouldn't have known about except that where I worked, one of my coworkers told me. So I went to talk to the deputy director because they turned me down. They said, you don't make enough money. $20 an hour is not enough money to qualify for your family size. So I literally went in face-to-face with the deputy director, and I begged him. And I said, Joseph, please, allow me to do this. If I promise you, if I move into one of your apartments, I will make the rent. I will not fail you if you give me this chance. Just cut me a break. Let me move in there. And I convinced him. So he let us move in because I was way past I was past my year by then. So I was able to move into an affordable apartment in Garden Grove and had all my kids with me. And it's just and actually after that, that deputy director became a friend of mine. So he bent the rules for me, and I always appreciate it when someone gives you a chance and bends the rules. But that's how I came out of being homeless. And it wasn't easy because I really wasn't making enough money, but I was determined. I was not going to become homeless again. I was going to stick with it. So I worked for that company for 2.5 years. Then I got another job with another shelter. And then I ended up down here where I am now in San Clemente, where I run a resource center for the homeless and working poor. But once I came out of that last shelter, my heart was all about, this system is horribly broken, and I've got to find a way to fix it. Everyone deserves a safe place to sleep. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're cracked out, drugged up, mentally ill. You still deserve a safe place to sleep. And to me, it seemed like the barriers to getting a safe place to sleep were far too high. It was more about the convenience of the providers, and I was working for a provider. So it's more about the convenience and the whim of the provider rather than is what are the real needs of these clients. And every shelter across the board, they pick the most functional people to deal with. It's because you're going to get good results. You're going to get good outcomes. Who wants to deal with the losers? Well, I want to deal with the losers because I see that nobody cares about them. To me, those are the least of these that Jesus talked about in Matthew 25. Those are the ones that I want to touch with the love of Jesus. Those are the ones that nobody else wants. Those are the ones I want. Give me the throwaways. You know, give me the people that I can recycle and lead them into a new life.
You know, you've gone through all of this, and there, you know, I'm listening to your story, and I'm thinking to myself, there is no way, there is absolutely no way, but then again, there's no way I'd have 9 children either.
No, I know. I don't blame you there.
Courage and the strength to do that alone, I mean, I guess, you know, I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, but look at the strength that you had going into it, and how much stronger you are now that you're on the other side. And again, no, I don't wish it upon anybody, but you're right. We're looking at life in a kind of a strained perspective. You going through all of this, me going through all the things that I've gone through, both of us coming out the other side going, the system is really, really wrong. We've got about 7 minutes, and I want you to share this question before I want you to share your website and everything. The system, if there is one thing that you can think of that can help change people's minds being the system, what would we do to change it?
Well, I actually already have a plan. I have a plan. What I've found in the last, the people I work with are not the sexy, attractive, cute people that you want to help. The people I work with are the bottom of the barrel. But what I've found is if I can take a story and put a face on it, I can call a church and say, here's this person. They're really trying. Can you help me? It's putting a face on it, making homelessness human. The problem is homelessness is just a sanitized issue, and it's an ugly issue, and people, they just shut off emotionally when you say, I want to deal with homelessness. No, nobody wants to touch that. But if you say, I've got this little family here, or I've got this gentleman here, an elderly guy, or I've got this guy here who's really trying hard to get his life on track, but he needs a little help. Are you willing to help? And I give them a specific thing, a specific need that this person has, like they need their car repaired, or they need a temp job, or they need money to get their ID, whatever it is. Then people or churches and individuals are happy to help. So my plan is to put a face on homelessness, and I have actually put in a pitch for a reality show on a producer's website, and I've gotten 3 production companies looking at it, although nobody signed it yet. But the whole idea behind it is to show real people who are really homeless in real crisis. And immediately when you see that story, people can call or go on a website and contribute to help that specific person, to make a difference for that person. Because I know that if you know somebody's story, you're going to care about them like I, at least more than you do now, but maybe not as much as we care about them because we see them all the time. But if you see somebody and we can make their story real to you, then you're going to want to get involved and you're going to want to help.
Go ahead and share. You've got 5 more minutes. Share your new website, where people can get a hold of your books. where they can connect with you, because I know a lot of people walk around with shame, especially if they're in a in that downward spiral or spiral of going homeless. So where can they reach out with you or to you in confidence? Go ahead and share with the audience all of that, and especially about the book and where they can reach out and purchase that book.
Sure. My website is www.suddenlyhomelesswithkate, Kate is spelled C-A-T-E, .com, suddenlyhomelesswithkate.com. You can buy a book there. If you have a Facebook account, you can go to facebook.com/suddenlyhomelesswithkate, and you can send me a message there if you'd like to have a private conversation. Maybe I can give you some advice or help you out and if you're in a crisis situation.
Absolutely. Well, this is we're going on the fourth week. This has been the end of the fourth week of your show, and now we're getting ready to go into the fifth week. And if you don't know what you want to talk about next week, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Okay. Let's really talk about the biggest fears, the worst nightmares. Again, if that that cause of that shame, because I think that is really what starts to spin us out of control when we really think we're going to lose, and then we go into that shame base. So can we talk about that next week?
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Perfect. Again, thank you so, so much, Kate, for choosing Soul Sister Radio to partner up with and have Suddenly Homeless with Kate on it. And it's a blessing, and I know that it truly is. And July 21st, you can come and meet Kate at the Soul Sister Enterprise Network that we will be having in San Juan Capistrano. So again, thank you, Kate, and we will see you next week on Soul Sister Thursday. All righty?
All right. See you then.
All right. See you next week.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio. Soul Sister Radio.
I was a dead man, out in the cold. Life was a pit and I was deep in a hole, just about to give up. Then lo and behold, a voice from within said, save your soul. Yo, brothers and sisters all around the globe, I got a story, word. just gotta be told to my family, friends, fans, even my foes. It's like this, y'all, this is how it goes. I was out in the world without a name or a goal, huh? Out of school and out of control. Set in my ways, yeah, stuck in the mold. And going the wrong way down a one-way road. Young and bold, I didn't wanna be told. I used to steal and brag about the stuff I stole. Then one bright day, my mind got blown when a voice from within said, save your soul. Listen, no, I didn't want to be told. Things were looking up and I was on the roll. I was a rude boy and a Romeo, and anywhere I went I started the show. I had money, woman, plenty of gold and an overinflated ego. I was a dead man, but I didn't know until a voice from within said, save your soul. A movie, and I was playing the role of a black youth living in the ghetto, where the action was, that's where I'd go. Right or wrong, I'd be going with the flow, but what you reap is what you sow. It's like karma, the bad you do will follow. You were round, and I was going down, right down, with my face in the ground. Two hands bound to a siren sound, none of my so-called friends anywhere to be found. As I thought to myself, in life you're alone, a voice from within said, anyone home? Yes, Lord, well here I be, if I ain't ready yet, I will never be. I'm sorry for the things that I did before, believe me, Lord, I won't do them no more. I'll be an arrow, if you will be my bow, and anywhere I'm sent, I'll gladly go. I'll be a witness all around the world to every man, every woman, every boy and girl. Cause I was born in the ghetto with a strong survive and with a will to strive. I began to rise from 79, or was it 75? When reggae music began to open my eyes about the truth, the right, Jah the Most High, and how to achieve that little pie in the sky. Inspirated, yeah, I was totally motivated to the point where I decided to chop the mic. But my direction was not to only those of my complexion, but the brown, yellow, red, and the white man. Critics criticize, cynics cynicize, any entertainer with a message they victimize. But in this world of sin, it's no surprise. So with the media, I sympathize. I hear the rich man's laughter, hear the poor man's cries. Hypocrites sabotage their lives through their eyes. Everyone's born, most of us die, but only God's children get the prize. Don't be a fool, be cool, come on and get wise. Yeah, wise up, no compromise. And listen to the voice that resides within your mind. Cause God has sent a guide to all mankind. Choice is yours, life above or death below. It's up to you to save your soul.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
welcome to Soul Sister Thursday. This is Maria DiGiovanni, and I want to welcome you to Soul Sister Radio and The Advocate with our birthday girl today, Susan Shengazar. Happy birthday, Susie. Take it away.
Oh, thank you, Maria. And happy birthday to Richard Therion also. We both share this day together. So happy birthday, Richard. I hope you're listening. Having a wonderful day. I am Susan Shengazar, the advocate standing strong against domestic violence and sexual abuse, especially of women and children. I won't quit fighting for you. I'm called to stand with God. So here I am on this radio show, another week into this year that we're standing against this cause. And today, I couldn't think of anything more special than to go to the Word, to one of my most favorite scriptures, which is John 3:16. And I went to the Message version of the Bible because it elaborated in a little bit different text. And it says, this is how much God loved the world. He gave His Son, His only one, His Son. And this is why, so that no one need be destroyed by believing in Him, anyone can have a whole and lasting life. God didn't go to all the trouble of sending His Son merely to point out an accusing finger, telling the world how bad it was. He came to help, to put the world right again. Anyone who trusts in Him is acquitted. Anyone who refuses to trust in Him has long been, since, under the death sentence without knowing it. And why? Because of that person's failure to believe in the one of a kind, Son of God, when introduced to him. And before I introduce our guest today on the show, I wanted to talk about three words. And those words are growth, community, and service. And I was looking in our wonderful little packet of cards that I was given at a crime survivor's benefit, and I realized how precious these cards were. The word growth, what does it mean? Full development, maturity. How do we live it? Life is all about growth. Sometimes it's extremely painful, and other times it's fun and fulfilling. We grow in relationships, in our careers, and in life's lessons. Where do you want to grow? Make a plan and get started. Chances are you'll be seeking growth in ways that will spark your gifts and passions. Community. What does it mean? A group of people having common interests. How do we live it? We are made for relationships. A positive, hopeful community of support is essential to healing and growth. Community doesn't need to be a formal support group, just people sharing, participating, and fellowshipping with one another. What do you like to do? Read, write, art, exploration for the outdoors. Find a group that shares your interests. Lastly, service. What does it mean? Work done for others, an act of assistance or benefit, favor or help. How do we live it? Nothing blesses us like the service we provide to others. Yet so many times we hear a voice that tells us we're too tired or busy or stressed out, worried. Why do you think that is? I think I know. The enemy hates nothing more than an act of love from one another. He hates it and will stop at nothing to try and stop it. Serve someone else in need today. It's the ultimate act of love. And today on our show, I'm bringing to you a man who has done just that with his life story. We have so many people that come on the show and share their stories of abuse and triumph. And he's just another one that God has put in our path to bring to you, to help those who are listening who are struggling with similar circumstances. It's not to make it highlighted that this is a good thing. Some of the things we talk about on this show were painful, but we triumphed through it so that we can be part of your healing today. This guest today's name is Tom Scales. Tom has a BS degree from Wheeling College. He has an MS degree from Villanova University and an MBA in International Business from Fairleigh Dickinson University. Tom Scales is retired from a 30-year career in the healthcare industry, which included a broad range of executive assignments domestically and internationally. He's a certified trainer in workshops that educate adults on the dangers of child sexual abuse and explaining safe practices to protect children. In addition, he's written workshops to highlight the impact of divorce, grooming, boundaries, and workplace challenges in the life of child and the adult survivor. Tom Scales is a survivor of child sexual abuse and the author of Terrible Things That Happened to Me, A True Story of Violence and Victory. In June 12th of 2012, he was recognized as Georgia Author of the Year in the category of Inspirational Books. On February 25th, 2012, Tom Scales received the inaugural 2012 Unsung Hero Award, sponsored by Save Our Children and Families Atlanta. His appearances include CNN Starting Point, Atlanta Live. Tom's award-winning book, Terrible Things That Happened to Me, His True Story of Violence and Victory. I welcome to our show Tom Scales. How are you, Tom?
I'm great, Susie. How are you?
I'm wonderful, and I'm so thrilled to have you. Thank you. Tom, I am so blessed to be able to interview you and have you on our show. I spent time reading through your blogs, and I have to say, some of your blogs hit home with me, and I just thank you for telling your story to the world, because as an emergency room nurse, I see little boys that have been touched, and a lot of times you only hear the girls' side of the story, and boys get overlooked. So I commend you for stepping out and sharing your story.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that I have a choice. When I talk about the story, you'll see I really believe that God kind of hit me over the head with a 2x4 at one point. And from then on, I've been doing what I've been told to do. You talked earlier about growth and passion and mission. I mean, this is definitely a passion for me. And I struggle constantly with the perception in our community, our society, our world, that under some circumstances when boys are sexually violated, that somehow they hit the lotto.
I've read that in your blog.
Right. It's a tragic perspective, and I think that that one perception masks the whole vision of boys being abused. Okay, boys can't be abused because boys are big and strong and men. Okay, but boys aren't. Boys are 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 year old. Okay, and they're being emotionally, psychologically, verbally, and physically overpowered by people 3, 4, 5 times their ages in some cases, and much bigger in size. And to expect them to defend themselves is nonsensical at best. And so My goal, my heart really is to get people to wake up to the idea that this happens to boys. I mean, it's interesting because the CDC statistics say 1 in 4 girls will be sexually molested before she's 18, 1 in 6 boys. To put that number into a context for you, the Susan G. Komen, I believe, quotes the number of 1 in 8 women will get breast cancer. So twice as many women will be sexually molested, and more boys will be sexually molested than women who will get breast cancer. And I don't begrudge the breast cancer movement a nickel that they get or any of the visibility that they get. But where's the outrage for the children of our society and of our world? There is none. There literally is none. And, I mean, it's stunning to me how people can look at the cases and not be moved by it, and not be moved to some type of action by it. And so that's my focus.
I'm so moved by your story on your blog about the car, and I just cried when I read it because I had a similar situation with me. But in reading your version, I hurt for you because, you know, cars are a boy's thing. And how dare someone use a ploy like that? It was just so real that I cried.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was asked by a paper to write an article for them on the impact of child being raped by a woman, and we'll get to the real story in a bit. But being raped by a woman and the impact on a man and subsequently a boy and subsequently the man. And I started out with all kinds of clinical stuff, and I said, you know, this is not going to be interesting. Nobody's going to read it. And so I came up with the storyline that you read, and that's really what it is. I mean, when it's happening to a boy, frankly, it doesn't feel good. At some point in time, your body takes over. It feels great. It's stunning. And you say, how can this be wrong? This is so, so wonderful, because you're 9, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. You've never been involved in any kind of sexuality or sexual interactions before, maybe. And so this happens to you. And it becomes a preoccupation in your life, because really what you've done is you've taken a child who should naturally evolve into relationships and understand the distinction between love, affection, sex, and, you know, well, these things. And in one event, they're all shuffled together. And frankly, it's taken me decades to separate them out and to understand them.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, and I know that in going through workshops with myself and other women and men that I've listened to, the hardest thing to forgive yourself for is your body that betrayed you, because the event was wrong. It shouldn't have happened, but your body experienced pleasure, and you felt guilty because what was happening was wrong, and it was a mixed confusion. And that's where I look at the devil and say, how dare you do this to us? And I just continually pray that off, because I see people stuck in that pattern, because your body was meant for pleasure. And when someone oversteps your boundaries and causes that to happen at a young age, it's very debilitating.
Yeah, and
you feel like you're not normal.
Right. You hit on what really is probably one of the two or three magic words for victims of child sexual abuse, ultimately survivors. Okay, and that's boundaries. Because what happens the whole time during the process of abuse, during the process of grooming, during all those events that lead to and are involved in the violation is people, the predators, are slowly eroding your personal boundaries. And you don't realize it. And what you, these are 93% of the time they're people you know and trust. So these are people around you that are around your family, that are engaging with your family, who have easy and frequently comfortable access to the child. And they're eroding your personal boundaries. Well, you know, as you grow up, it's not an allergy that you outgrow. You grow up without any boundaries, which leads you to a life that is just so filled with distortion that it's very, very difficult. And I think these, you talked about the trauma of the enjoyment. I think that most of the survivors, I can tell you, I've talked to well over 500 adult survivors one-on-one. I've never looked for anybody. People have contacted me, okay? And what I see in them is the guilt and the shame that from the abuse, because the abuse destroyed their boundaries, and as a result of not having boundaries, they have acted out in certain ways. And that's one of the focal points of their whole life is, I'm evil. Okay, and I can tell you that was me for a long time, and there were a lot of things that changed me, but one thing that changed me a lot was Jeremiah 17:9-10, and Jeremiah 17:9-10 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, will search the heart and examine the mind, and judge a man according to his deeds, according to what his actions deserve." And if you just think about, I mean, it is such a profound series of words for me, because it puts into context the behavior of the predator. It puts into context my behavior, and it puts into context the whole issue of forgiveness. Okay? I cannot judge because I cannot see the heart and the soul of the person who's acting out on me. What happened to them to make it okay for them to do to me what they did? I mean, I say I'm not a person who can judge that. God can, and He will. And at the same time, because of the distortion of my personal boundaries and the just horrifying behavior that I was taught as a child, he's gonna look at me in that context and judge my behavior. And there's a point in time in my life when I understood all this, and I knew that I could never, ever, ever be that person again. And I think that's a part of what's hard, particularly for men. But I'll speak. I will say, I've talked. Most of the people I've talked to have been women. I think it's for both. But I think men are far more fearful of, I want to say, disclosing or exposing the things that have happened to them.
I agree with that, Tom, because of the whole masculine ego, that you have to be stronger than the woman, and how could a man or, you know, male be overtaken by a woman, and especially when it is a woman that is the perpetrator, it is a hard thing to say. I know a man who was abused by his father by bringing in a babysitter to have sex with them, to teach them how to have sex at age 12, so that they would, quote, learn how to do the trade. Well, then that person grows up to be an abuser because he saw so much happen and he never respected women. And I happened to be his first wife, and that was what I learned later, all the abuse that happened to him. Well, I, you know, had I had tools in my toolbox, I would never have gotten into a relationship that like that. But I had no boundaries, like you were saying, because I had been victimized myself. So when people mesh like that together, you're set up for disaster. But people often seek those kind of relationships because you feel comfortable with one another and you don't know why. And I believe that you don't know why because it's familiar spirits. And if you're untrained in the Bible, you just have no armor, which is what happens to a lot of us.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's really a struggle for a survivor, frankly, to choose a mate. And I'll tell you, every Father's Day I reissue one of my blogs. I don't know if you saw the one to fathers, but I've got a blog on there. It's real short, and it essentially it says, dads, you can protect your daughter from, frankly, from being trafficked, from bad behavior by men, from marrying the wrong guy, by the way you treat your wife and your daughter. Because if you treat them properly, then that's what they come to expect. And that's what your daughter sees, the relationship between you and your wife, sees how you treat your wife. And when some guy starts cursing her out or smacking her around, she says, whoa, this is not what it's supposed to be like. But if dad smacks his wife around or curses her out or demeans her, debases her, all those things, he's teaching his daughter to accept that's normal, typical behavior that she should expect. And frankly, he's showing his sons that that's how you treat a lady. And so, I mean, I think that the fathers have an enormous responsibility in this whole picture to create a visual demonstration every day for their children of what it's like to be a man and what it's like, how they should be treating a lady. And I think if they do that, their children will be more reactive to all this
Absolutely.
Bad behavior.
Absolutely. Tom, we're just going to take a brief station identification break, and we'll come right back with your story. We're listening to Tom Scales, and I am the advocate.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlor Limited.com.
Hi, I'm Susan Shengazar. I am the advocate. Are you a healthcare professional facing burnout? Do you have a heart for the homeless? Have you ever been a victim of domestic violence or sexual abuse? You can learn from my experiences in my books, The Anointing of Mercy from the Heart of a Parish Nurse. Or I'll meet you at Winston Wall Street Journal. Journey to My Father's Palace, Destiny, Coincidence, you decide. You can find these books on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Zulon Press, or Google me.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome back to Soul Sister Radio. I'm Susan Shengazar, the advocate. Today we have with us Tom Scales, and he wrote the book Terrible Things That Happened to Me, A True Story of Violence and Victory. Tom, in your blogs, you talk about pages in your book from being a Boy Scout. This particularly hit home with me because I also got an email from James Dobson about Boy Scouts and how homosexuality is still being allowed into the Boy Scouts. And it's disturbing to me to read your story and how many kids out there are being touched. And that's what it really hit home today, because you talk about the initiation process, secret process that he used to do this act to you. How many kids do you think this is happening to in our world?
I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that the answer is a lot. Okay? I can tell you, beside my desk here, I've got a copy of one segment of the perversion files from the Boy Scouts of America. And it's about, I think it's about 100, 150 pages long. I think there are anywhere from 10 to 25 entries on a page. So you're talking thousands. And that's just one piece. Okay? These are listings of files kept by the Boy Scouts of America that identified individuals who were not acceptable to be volunteers in the Boy Scouts of America because of sexually inappropriate behavior. Couple of examples. One guy was caught teaching boys the benefits of group masturbation.
Oh, my gosh.
Another one was caught raping a boy. Okay? I mean, they're just, the stories just go on and on and on and on. In one case, the predator literally went to the Boy Scouts and negotiated a deal that if they would keep silent about it, he would resign. Okay? So this is the mentality that you have. And the boys, I'm going to go to the punchline first, and then I want to talk about the Boy Scouts. I believe they should pull the tax-exempt status of the Boy Scouts. I think that every executive in the Boy Scouts who has any association with hiding these predators should be face justice, whatever that means, okay, because they are easily as guilty as the predators, in my opinion. And now let's go back to the whole issue. They literally hid these people. They weren't good enough. They were not acceptable in the Boy Scouts, and they would put them, they would move them out of the Boy Scouts in most cases. In some cases they didn't, but in most cases they moved them out of the Boy Scouts, but they didn't report anybody. And I don't know of a case where the Boy Scouts of America, and I can say the same thing about the Catholic Church, okay? I don't know of a case where the Boy Scouts of America have identified a predator and taken that information to law enforcement so that that person could face justice and the young man involved could get help.
Why is that?
I'm not positive, but I'm going to tell you why. I believe, and I think the same thing applies to the Catholic Church, I believe that they place their reputation so far above the behavior of the people in their organizations that they do anything to protect the reputation. Now it's a matter of money, okay? Because both of them are facing million-dollar settlements and all kinds of lawsuits and litigation, okay? And so the Boy Scouts of America, first of all, the files that I have, I believe, come up to 1990. They're about a 15-year window. There's a whole segment of files that apparently the Boy Scouts destroyed. But they have not released, to the best of my knowledge, the files from 1990 to present. So that's 23 years. So you've got these predators who are unacceptable to the Boy Scouts in their program. They have these accusations against them, okay, and they are not turning that information. Not only are they not turning that information over to law enforcement, they literally have gone all the way to the Supreme Court in California to protect that information from being disclosed. Okay? In my mind, that is the definition of corruption. And I believe they are just absolutely corrupt to the core on a moral level. And I think that I'm happy to see churches pulling away from them, not because of the whole issue of homosexuality, but the whole issue. And I don't understand why the churches are outraged about homosexuality, but it was not possible to get them to be outraged about all the boys being abused.
Tom, what if we had a petition and we asked for those files to be released and turned over to law enforcement? I mean, what if we forced it open?
I can tell you.
I really think that this is, you know, some of these pedophiles, I know for a fact in my gut, have hurt or maybe even killed someone, and we're protecting them.
Susie, two things. First of all, the average child molester has 117 victims.
I believe that.
And as a result, you're looking at tens of thousands of children that are not a part of the perversion files, but are by implication connected in some way to all of these predators. Okay? And secondly, the only way that the files that I have been released is because Tim Kosnoff and Kelly Clark, one's in Oregon and one's in Washington State, and they literally successfully sued the Boy Scouts of America on abuse cases, and as a part of those cases, they were successful in getting the release of these information. Boy Scouts of America has been protecting this with all the financial resources they have.
How is that legal to protect someone?
I don't know the answer. I can tell you that I have literally filed a statement with Homeland Security asking why, if the FBI can go into Gibson Guitar and take all their records because they used the wrong kind of wood in guitars, then why in the world are they not swarming on the Boy Scouts of America and the Catholic Church? Okay.
Well,
I don't understand it at all.
This is a good one to put on a prayer list and pray this wide open. Because
We actually have a guest. When you have a moment, get on to. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's Charles.
No,
so.
Let's bring him on. Let's bring him on.
Go ahead, Charles. Say hello.
Tom, Charlie Stecker here in Philadelphia.
Hi, Charlie. How you doing?
Hi,
good. I called to support you and to let you know that, you know, we're out here. We got you. And I apologize to the screener. Something came to mind. I was waiting online. You're talking about the Catholic Church, and I can speak specifically on that at the moment, in reference to the Halsey Hyde thing. Tom, you're familiar with Joey Hart. I spoke to you about him.
Yeah, sure.
Young man from Iowa.
Sure.
Well, Joey Hart, we just recently, Tom, you may not even know this yet, Joey Hart was abused by a priest here in Philadelphia along with his brother. You know that part. His brother systematically killed himself to a life of drug and alcohol because of the abuse and nobody believing him. But there was another man that operated with this priest. The priest was Father Peter J. Dunn. The man who operated with Father Dunn was a doctor. His name was Dr. John Ott. The importance of what I'm going to share with you right now is that Dr. Ott was, at the latter part of last year, apprehended in Kenya for sexually abusing boys in Kenya. He was taken out of Kenya, put over in Tanzania, where then the FBI went down and opened an investigation. My friend Joey Hart was involved in that investigation, was contacted by the FBI investigators out of Washington, D.C. Subsequent to that, just this past May, Dr. Ott was extradited from Tanzania to Washington, D.C., where he pled guilty to 14 charges of child molestation and child endangerment and sexual misconduct with children over in Kenya. So he sits right now waiting for sentencing. His original sentencing is supposed to be coming up in about 2 weeks. It's been postponed. Joey and I are waiting for the next sentencing. My concern with this, as I'm sharing this as it's happening, is that we've reached out to the FBI, Joey has, to try to connect Dr. Ott, which is shown in documentation, who is involved with the Catholic Church here in Philadelphia, the Archdiocese, and connect him to cases here to make it more solid. Dr. Ott is already pled guilty to the charges from Kenya. He faced 30 years, $150,000. And for whatever reason, the U.S. government will not tie him to any cases from the United States, which really bewilders my mind. So I just want to add that. That's currently going on as we speak.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not at all surprised. You know, Susie, can I go back a step or two?
Absolutely, Tom.
So that people understand why I have strong feelings about the Catholic Church, I'm going to give you a quick synopsis of my story. Okay? My abuse started when my father accused me of stealing a nickel off my mother's dresser. And my punishment was he gave me a cardboard box and had me put all my things in it, and he threw me out of the house. I was 5 years old. And
wow.
That left me with an extraordinary sense of insecurity and disposability. So when I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm being sodomized, I have no place to go. When I try to get out of the house and I become an altar boy, and one day the priest takes me back into the manse, and I think that, wow, this is great, somebody's paying attention to me, and proceeds to forced me to perform oral sex on him, I had no place to go.
How old were you at that time?
It's the one thing that I will tell you, I probably don't have five memories from my childhood. Do you remember any of your birthdays ever as a child?
You know, the thing about me, Tom, is I remember everything in which I wrote my story, but I don't remember anything.
Literally, I don't have any past. I don't have those markers in my life that give me time windows.
So I
go through this, and I'm abused by these two priests, jointly and separately. I join the Boy Scouts, and I go through the initiation you talked about before that. All in all, I was sexually molested by 8 different men. And I was held down and raped by a woman before I was 13. And so I have forgiven the people that abused me. I mean, and frankly, I need to make one other disclaimer. I use the words abuse and I use the words molested. Everybody does. But I'm sure you will agree, Susie, those words don't come close to describing what happened to you or to me.
No, it's horrific. There's no word.
That's one of the reasons I think the society can kind of pass this all off as, you know, you'll grow out of it or you'll get over it, because the words really don't capture the horror of those moments. Okay? So I wanted people to understand that there's a rationale behind my feelings about the Catholic Church, and there's a rationale behind my feelings of Boy Scouts. I don't have any anger. I have a lot of outrage about the Boy Scouts and the Catholic Church, because I don't believe they've changed one bit.
Your story is so compelling, because, Tom, you had multiple instances happen to you, and so did I. And I had so much that when I went to a counselor, they were like, I can't help you. And so then it made me feel worse. Mm-hmm. You know, that was my first attempt because I knew what had happened wasn't right, but I needed to talk to someone. And back then, they had no counseling available. So when I think about all the people who've had problems, and I have a brother who died at age 40 of alcoholism and drugs, but I believe he was also perpetrated by the Catholic Church because he was a devout altar boy. And what happened to my brother that caused him to drink at age 15? And so I know in my gut that something happened. And so when I hear your story, and I know there's so many people because people confide in me as a minister, and I have literally seen it on so many people because what happens to you when you're abused, your senses are heightened. So I'm a seer. I see things, I hear things, I smell things. And if I smell a smell that was familiar, it'll take me right back to that incident. So I'm careful when I go places or if someone has the same cologne, it bothers me. Those things I'll live with for the rest of my life, as I'm sure you and every other victim out there. But what I do have is God that gives me the ability to put the helmet of salvation on to guard my heart and to give me tools that I didn't have as a young girl.
And I think that's exactly what we've learned is we have learned the tools. We have learned personal boundaries. We have learned about relationships. We have learned all those things now in a biblical context. And so they have a totally different meaning than they had back then. And I mean, I can tell you that I have crystal clear boundaries. Nobody else crosses them, and neither do I. And I don't really have flashbacks anymore. I don't have very many triggers. I think the more you talk about it, the more you process it. And you know, when in your opening you talked about service, okay? I think service has been probably the greatest healing tool for me of all. I mean, think about it. I've talked to over 500 individuals who were sexually violated as children. Okay? And you know, my book has had an impact on people. People have told me that. And I don't take any credit for any of this. It's not, none of this is about me at all. But it is about being a person who is open and willing to talk out loud about what happened to them. And frankly, that gives people the courage sometime to talk quietly to me when nobody's listening. And it begins the process of them becoming free. It begins the process of them learning boundaries. It begins the process of them understanding that God is your Father. That was such a hard concept for me to understand because of the things that happened to me. I mean, how do I...
It is hard.
It was very hard. And I think one of the other things I think is really important is that as you go through this process of healing, the people alongside of you are healing at the same time. And what you're doing, the doors that you're opening to people, I mean, there's just no measure to put on the value you have in helping them find the substance and the depth, spiritual depth of their life. It's so important.
It is so true, Tom, that when you are victimized so badly and you come to a place in Christ where He takes over and heals that part of you and you allow God to give you beauty for ashes, you look the devil straight in the eyes and you know that he is so afraid of you now because of what he did to you and now what you're doing for God. And the fact that you're able to forgive any person that's ever hurt you, disappointed you, abandoned you, mistreated you, rejected you, is huge because it's exactly opposite of what the devil's plan was. So you have taken on the world and said, you know what, devil, you're done. You're not gonna continue without me saying something about it. Your voice is so empowering to people because it's so unbelievable to have a man like you step forward. But it's happening more and more. God is putting more and more people like you and me out there on the front lines. And when you're on the front lines, you're a general. And you can't take out a general. You're so powerful.
I agree with you
100%. I commend you.
And I think that's really what this is. That's what me being here tonight is all about, okay? Because I really want people to learn about this. I want them to be sensitized about it. I want them to protect the children, both boys and girls. I mean, I've got a beautiful granddaughter. My daughter is expecting a child. I want them to live in a safe world. And I don't want them having predators around them, and I don't want them having to deal with anything even close to what I had to deal with. Okay, but the beauty is I've learned all that the hard way. I don't want them to learn it the hard way. And frankly, it applies to any children, anywhere, any color, any age, any country, any culture. We need to place value on children, period. And I think Charlie's story is a typical example for the Catholic Church, that geography is the solution to the problem, okay? I don't know how many stories I could tell you about priests who have been moved from one part of the world to the other, and they started acting out on new group of children in the new part of the world, and you say, holy cow, it's a pestilence, and it needs to stop.
Yes, I've read so much because I was raised Catholic, and, you know, fortunately, you know, I was not physically abused by the Catholic Church, but, you know, I was abused in so many ways that I don't even know how to explain, and a lot I couldn't put in my book because there are no words for some of the things I experienced. And I chose to just not even try and write about it. I wrote so much as it was that people were like, you've got to be kidding me. There was so much. But when I read other people's stories, my story seems so small. And it should never have been a story.
No, don't ever allow yourself to go there. Because that, what that says is that there's a degree of okay for a predator.
No, I don't mean it that way.
If you were touched one time or a thousand times, it doesn't make any difference. You were raped one time or a thousand times. If you were sodomized one time or a thousand times, or you were just fondled one time. Frankly, in my experience talking to people, the damage is always the same. Your trust has been violated, so you don't trust people. That makes you isolated from people. And that begins the process of distorting relationships. Think about the cascade that happens with that. The relationships get distorted. You grow up. You try to have a marital relationship with someone, and you're all screwed up because of what's happened. And so you get divorced. And so your children are children of single-family home. If you look at the statistics for children from single-family homes, what you find is 63% of the teens that commit suicide come from single-parent homes. 70% of the teens who are incarcerated come from single-family homes. Doesn't say all single-family homes are bad. Doesn't say anything even close to that. But it has an extraordinary impact. And it's the beginning of it is the abuse of the young man, we'll say, or the mother, either one, but we'll say the young man, the abuse of the young man that makes it impossible for him to build and sustain proper relationships, particularly intimate relationships and highly communicative relationships, and that's where it leads. So you start a cascade of damage that goes on for generations.
Absolutely.
And that's what has to stop.
Absolutely. Tom, what year did your book come out?
I think it was 2010.
2010. And so you have spoken pretty much around the world with your book, or where are you at with your book and tour?
No. Actually, I gave away most of the copies. I donated virtually all the copies of my book to Voice Today. So
wow.
That when sells the books, anybody goes to Amazon and buys it, it's filled by Voice. And Voice gets all the proceeds, and it goes into programs for awareness, prevention, and healing. Voice was an integral part of my healing process, and I will be forever grateful for Angela and for the group there. I talk wherever I'm invited to talk. I mean, I've not spoken outside the country. I've traveled outside the country for years and years and years, okay? I deal with people through the Internet in a lot of ways. And, I mean, I've talked with folks in, you know, probably in 15 different countries, survivors who have contacted me. But I'm 70 years old, hopping on a plane every once in a while. I mean, I did that for a while, and I was on planes constantly, and I do my best to avoid it now.
Tom, I would really like to set something up where you and I are at the same event, because the fact that we both are on the same level together with our stories and having a book, I really would invite that to happen.
Oh,
I also donated my story, 50% of the proceeds, to Safe Passage, number one charity in Los Angeles, against domestic violence. I'm on a mission. I really want healed.
Just for interrupting you, because I firmly believe that being sexually abused as a child predisposes a girl to accept violent behavior in a marriage.
Absolutely. I was abused at 2 years old. Who set my standard for me?
Yeah.
I had nowhere to go. I knew nothing except what had happened.
Yep.
It never left me.
So it's really important, and I guess it's really important that we break all these molds, all these organizations. I mean, we need to get this clearly out in the light where everybody can see it in a very highly visible way, because we need to have the kind of resources available to help every young woman and every young man, because they destroy lives as they go through their life doing what was taught them to be normal. And we have to bring a stop to it.
Tom,
the
we have
only way
just
it's going to stop
minutes,
is to get
yeah.
it really visible, and so that people can listen to you, young women can listen to you, and they can say, gee, if she can do that, I can do that. I'm going to talk to her. Or they can do the same thing to me. To me, that's what has brought people out. It's not advertising workshops and programs that's brought people out. It's speaking on the issue where people look at you and listen to your story and say, if he can survive that, I can deal with what I've got to deal with. And being willing to spend the time with people, to talk with them and to help them and to arrange to get help for them so that they can actually have their healing needs met, whether it's a support group, whether it's professional counseling, whether it's a mentoring program, whatever it is, People need help. This is not something you can heal by yourself.
Absolutely. And, Tom, you and I have been chosen in Christ before the foundations of the world, that we're holy and without blame before him. It says that in Ephesians 1:4. And I just want to thank you so much for taking this time to be on The Advocate today. And as a four ambassador who is standing with a great community of men and women against this cause, I just want to honor you in the name of Jesus Christ and place a blessing over you to continue this fight. And I just want people to know that they can go to your website. You want to give them quickly your website before we sign off here?
Yeah, I'm actually going to step down from the Innocence Revolution, so I'm gonna give you my personal email. My personal email is tomscales2004@yahoo.com. I respond to everybody. I'll say that
Thank you so much, Tom. Go ahead.
2004@yahoo.com.
And listeners, we have with us Tom Scales, who has just been an awesome inspiration for us today. And if you've been a victim of child sexual abuse, I want you to know that you can write to Tom. You can also contact us here on The Advocate, and we will answer you back. And I just thank you that you were listening to our show today and shared my 54th birthday. I am a survivor of domestic and sexual abuse, and I'm standing in the gap for each one of you, and I will never stop fighting this cause. God bless you, and I'll see you next week here on The Advocate.
Soul Sister Radio.
Rebecca Lawler Limited is the culmination of a lifelong dream for philanthropist and designer Rebecca Lawler. She designed her patented, unique glass heart, which is handcrafted by glass artists in Virginia. Placed in the center is a brilliant gem. The heart can be worn with the Rebecca Lawler Limited signature ribbon or an awareness ribbon of choice. To join the mission of the Hearts of Hope Foundation and add a Rebecca Lawler signature heart to your own personal style, go to RebeccaLawlerLimited.com. That's RebeccaLawlerLimited.com.
Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.
Welcome to Soul Sister Thursday. This is Maria DiGiovanni, and welcome back to Soul Sister Radio and Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan. Becky, are you there? Take it away.
Yes, I am. How are you, Maria? Happy belated 4th of July.
I know. Happy belated 4th of July. And it was a crazy 4th of July. It was good. How was yours?
Mine was phenomenal. My son, CJ, had graduated from the Marines boot camp.
Congratulations. Congratulations. He was on the West Coast, or the East Coast, correct? So he was at...
Yes, he was.
Where did they graduate from on that side?
He graduated from Parris Island. He's going to be going up to Camp Lejeune this Sunday.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very short time period. But it was really patriotic. I don't know another way to say, you know, going into Parris Island, seeing all of these soldiers, the stories they told. There was some emotional ones and past soldiers. Just even seeing my son in this uniform was... emotional enough.
Yeah, I remember when my son became a Marine. It's very intense. It's really, really special. So congratulations, and it's really kind of crazy being a Marine mom.
Well, did your son go to Camp Pendleton then?
I'm not sure if he came out here or if he went out there. It was so long ago now, I don't remember anymore. He was down here. No, he was here in Southern California, so it had to be in Camp Pendleton. Wherever they do it. Heck, I don't even know anymore. Gosh, I'm old, Becky.
Well, I just think it's that, and bless your heart, and I rebuke that. But I was reading about CJ, and CJ had so much rain throughout this entire fall, right, or this entire spring. And here we're supposed to have humidity, and Georgians and people in the Carolinas are used to humidity. But we're used to humidity, and it's hot, and we get to move slow, and we drink lots of lemonade and tea. It's been raining, so much so. And I was just looking over Twitter and seeing how many people are telling me about how bad their weather is. I couldn't help but Google
let me see, just before July 1st, before we were going out, to find out where he might go, just to get a guess, because he didn't know yet. So I was like, oh, this would be great. Let me hope and pray that he's going to San Diego. It'd be like a vacation now and see the sun. And
right.
They can only go to Camp Pendleton if they signed up on the West Coast and can only go to Paris Island if they signed on the East. There's a place in Chicago, and oh, I found out that my daughter's boyfriend, he's going into the Navy. And I thought my son was really having great weather because it rained, so he didn't have all of the heat in the tent, and he still had a whole bunch of hard training, but not as bad as other people going through this spring training program or those that are about to go in. He's going into the Navy in Chicago December 12th before the holidays. I was just like,
wow,
your family is going to kill you.
Oh, well. Well, it's pretty exciting, and he's going to be able to travel the world and go off and do all kinds of great stuff now. So that's pretty
he's
exciting.
Thrilled about it, and he's thrilled about. It's funny. I mean, he came back, and I can see it more like a mission and a calling, because he's like, "Mom, I'm dedicated to this. We're dedicated to protecting." And I'm like, wow, and just hearing the stuff that we've talked about and going through my mind and listening to the show beforehand, I pray that they all had a different mindset going in and that my son's mind never changes.
Oh.
I don't know. I don't want that switch to flip.
His mind has changed, trust me. Once they go into the Marines, there's something different about your kid. It's something changes.
I just pray that, you know, he's still so happy. He came on out and he says, "Mom, I can't wait to go back in. And I'm going to be serving here and I'm going to be going there." And there's, you know, and I'm just like, okay, good. As long as you stay this way and he really is a Christ follower, leader, and believer. But I can't help but hear these other stories and go, don't jinx it. I'm coming up with all these other things. And saying, "You do respect women." Of course I do, Mom. You get to pick each one. And I was like, okay, good. Okay, as long as we have this one down.
Very good.
Now, I was going to go into something about leadership. I don't want to talk all about my son. I could talk about him for days, and I actually have been. I was going to go in about some trends, and we are going to be hitting some things on leadership. And I know you and I had talked about possibly even throwing this into something else before we go into full-blown leadership. But as a matter of fact, leadership is trending, and it's trending because Google and Microsoft have been buying up software to measure influence. And with NSA, and finding out even today, they leaked that there's the possibility of the Skype phone calls that have been captured.
Go back to that. What does that all mean, and what does that mean, and so on, and what does that all mean?
I would guess that about 4 weeks ago, Eric Snowden produced files, and he was a guy that worked for NSA in Hawaii. And he got files showing what NSA was doing under his view in his office, and he displayed it. And he fled, and he went over to Asia,
right.
And he's looking for a different country to be protected from the U.S. for leaking all this stuff. And during that time period, Obama's administration and other people and other businesses have outright said, "Oh, we didn't give your information away." And then it ended up being that Verizon went down. It's proven they not only gave information, they gave NSA servers to have full access to everybody's real-time data. And then it went through other companies and Google and so on and so forth, and major companies all over the United States, or companies that are global, but maybe based in another country. And now it's Skype. And the report this morning was that they actually have recordings. And the one thing Obama said was, this is only data, his Obama administration, it's only metadata, which means your phone numbers, the times, maybe your latitude and longitude of where you are, the computer or phone you had called from. Now, if they have Skype, what else do they have? I don't know about you, but I believe that they have the information and more.
What do they want with all this information, okay? I mean, really, most of us are pretty boring. Okay, so
most of us are pretty boring. The worst things I saw when it was first being leaked by, I'm going to call them conspiracy theorists, that, you know, top ones like Brooke Baines, he put it out there on Twitter, and he's wrote some articles on it. His biggest problem is that it isn't the government who really controls NSA. It's the IRS. And the IRS is not truly a division of the government from how we look at this. And the IRS has different rules that they get to jump over. Being an IRS agent, they have the right to lie to you, while a police officer is not supposed to. Government officials aren't supposed to, but IRS people are told you don't ever give your real name, you don't tell them what you really have, and basically you can do whatever you can to trap them into paying taxes. I don't believe that they all go out and do that. They're under a different umbrella, their own. And
well, law enforcement,
the IRS runs NASA, not NASA,
right.
NSA.
Okay.
Which means, and this is what his group of people were pondering, that means the IRS has full access to all places. And how ridiculous for us to believe that the only reason the IRS possibly is in charge of this is to get people to pay taxes.
Right.
Does that mean, like, 7 years later, they actually know all of your credit card charges, they know where you browse, who your friends are, how to track you down? Possibly. But what's out there is that this is a government thing. They want to be able to track who you are, who your friends are, and track patterns. So I do think most of us are boring. What's the most scary is future politicians and influencers and business people's information. They're not here today. They're up and coming. And say they did some stupid things in high school, college. They've done some stupid things in their marriages. And maybe more and more and more, and we've watched enough TV to see that there's a lot of things that people can do wrong. And maybe they clean up their act, they go into politics, or they start running a mega corporation, bringing in billions of dollars to the United States and feeding, you know, hundreds of thousands of families every single night. The government agency, NSA, could step in and hamper their influence. And that's the part that I think is the scariest. And to me, it's more scary because it's our kids who have no problem posting on Facebook.
Right.
Twittering, going on Instagram. There's applications right now for mobile phones where people are taking nudie pictures. They call them selfies, where they're taking only pictures of themselves. Some of them are very suggestive. Some of them are nude pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids think that it's immediately deleted. However, there's software out there to capture all of it. It's getting put into servers, and the people are serving them up when they see that there's so much skin. So your kid's life could be ruined. Our kids' lives could be ruined. I don't know what to say. So we'll find out what their true goal is. I think that as many things have just been put out here now, there's probably hundreds of thousands of other ones and other ways they could use it. They're trying to tell us if somebody was shot dead, we'll be able to know who was in that particular office, that particular building, that parking lot. Okay?
Right.
Okay, now think about this. anybody who's tech savvy enough and anybody who's seen any of these criminal TV shows, the criminal figures out how the police catch you. Then they tweak that. And now we might even get people arrested in different things because the criminal's going to know how to unplug from the system. He's going to know to leave his phone. He or she.
Right.
He's going to know, or he or she is going to make sure that other things are put into place. Oh, my gosh. There's no good. I don't even know what to say.
It's crazy to think where our world is. I really am feeling that every day I wake up and I'm not in the country I was born in anymore. It's really, really crazy. It's crazy.
Well, I think about, like, my grandparents talking to me when they were even older than us right now and talking about how it's a world that they don't know. Good. I'm happy that we're moving. I'm just not liking to see where we're moving towards.
Yeah, wow. No kidding.
And we're getting desensitized. And after this NASA thing, there was people talking on my Facebook, and one of them goes, I'm sick of this. And now Facebook came up with a new thing where if you go into your Facebook search, you can put down single people near me. My friend's name Mark. Where do my friends like to hang out? What are the spouse, of all my friends, what are my friends' spouses' names? Who was born in this year? Who likes this stuff? That's now all searched within your Facebook search box at the top.
Right.
And a friend of mine is like, I'm furious. Do you know I can look up every bank manager for Bank of America right now? I can look up people who are police officers that put this in. So
yeah,
this can compromise so many people. And my other friend goes and says, they're morons. Do you have a problem with them being bank managers? Apparently they're proud. The officers must be proud. They must be doing something right. Well, I agree with the one friend saying this is wrong. However, I also agree saying they're the ones that put it in there. And when I was writing in, they're going, I agree with you both. And the other one said, I want to quit and delete all of this, but even if I delete it today, it's still here.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going through it, and I'm going, oh, I think that everything I posted is fine. I don't know. They're going to find out how great my grammar is. They're going to see how excited I get and my dyslexia coming through the phones and stuff. But what do you think of what you've written? Have you paused to think about what you're writing more?
Oh, I really am staying focused. Isn't that ask me this question? I'm really staying focused to the business side of life, if you've noticed. I'm forwarding a couple of comments here and there and a couple of scriptures here and there, but most of it I'm sticking to just what we're doing on the radio and what we're doing under Four International now, and keeping it business. But what I find interesting is that there's really not a fine line. There's no line between who Maria is and who Four International is. So my life is pretty transparent, so there's not much that is private, even though I am a pretty private person. Isn't that kind of strange?
Well, you know what I kind of think it's like? You're saying to me, I put the stuff out that I care about. Ask me and I'll tell you. And if I don't want to tell you, I'm going to say, can you wait until later? I just don't feel that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you are straightforward. But it's kind of like clothes. We
yeah,
have to look
pretty,
putting
pretty much.
An elegant ball gown.
You
on.
Still there? It sounds like you went off. There you go. Okay, go ahead.
I think it's like clothes. We know when we like the elegant ball gown. So we'll put that on as our business. Or a facade of when we're putting up photos. Then there's the days where we're just in jeans. And there are cute jeans. They're the jeans that we think make our butt bigger, or for me to have a butt. and then, you know, but narrow down the thighs and everything else. But you know what I'm talking about, and not to have the fat. Well, you don't, but, you know, I get the muffin top, and you know, certain jeans, like, I don't have one. But anyway, I think there's jean days, but when we're going through it, we don't want people knowing if we've gotten up and we're still in our pajamas, or we have our favorite T-shirt that we've had for years and we painted it and stained it up, whatever. It might be clean, but nobody would believe it. And that's Facebook. And the only thing is that a lot of kids don't have a problem with the dirty T-shirt on. And it all looks dirty, public, but... With that, focus on the elegant ball gown. Focus on your business suits, your business face. And if it really is something for friends, lock down your Facebook. Call up and have friends come to a party. Mm-hmm. Talk to each other. Don't be having your rants and raves. The things that you absolutely can't wait to put into somebody's face, those are the ones that stay with you and everybody shares.
Right.
There's a YouTube out there for a lady from the South, and she is so unbelievably hot. And she keeps swearing and swearing to this video, and within a couple hours, she already had 60-some thousand people. I couldn't help but go and check it out. And all she's doing is telling all of us how unbelievably hot it is and how she hates her air conditioner. And she's like, it's set at 69 degrees. I'm full. I'm sweating. I'm dreaming. I went to sleep. I tried to sleep. When I finally got to sleep, I dreamt somebody turned me on fire. And she is ranting so upset, and I couldn't help but like it and share it.
Okay.
Now, if that was me, I would not be happy that it went viral. Now,
right.
Granted, I'd be really thrilled that it hit over the 60-some thousand mark and probably create a few more. But not everybody's out there to get exposure online. They're trying to get their products, their cause, their
right.
awareness, showing love, connecting with people. So I don't recommend it. And I don't think that that lady had any clue. She thought it was going on her Facebook to tell her friends and her family how much she disliked it. And one of them put it on YouTube and shared it.
Right. Oh, Lord. Oh, how crazy. That's just crazy.
Now, let's go back to some of the stuff I posted on Women on the Edge on our Facebook.
Yeah.
I have some other things about, like, what's going on about the NSA, what's going on about what people are sharing. Microsoft has been buying up some companies, and one of them is a company more similar to possibly like a Google Plus for companies to log in and watch the influence of their employees. Another one, and that's supposed to be unraveling very soon. They also partnered with a company that I put on the page that I actually just logged into as part of SharePoint, and it's also, hold on one second, it's called Yammer. And
okay.
It is to track your employees and help find hidden talents. And I actually think that it's beneficial because you connect your employees' social networks. Think about this, NSA. They're looking
right.
for their leadership and their influence and hidden talents to try to monopolize and use current tools within the company before going and looking for somebody else. What's great is for some people who might have, like, maybe you have a DJ in the company and you're going to do a party, why go and hire somebody outside when you could ask the DJ to probably do it? And he might even do it for free, and that's actually one of their examples.
Right.
They said if you have some employees that have high clout scores, and part of this new software and what Google, what Microsoft they came in and done is it does have a partnership now with clout. And it's utilizing, and it says that it's giving it more servers, and they are going to be handling their technology to master true influence. and they're going to start doing stuff called social mapping to find out if Maria talks to me today, one of our listeners retweets or writes on their Facebook a quote that you had said, we may not be directly connected to that person, but because they went on to their own Facebook and other people shared it, it shows your impact. And so
right,
even handling jumps.
Okay.
So we need to focus on our leadership. Facebook, the internet, and anything that you're putting out there is your outfit. And way back when my mom and my grandma, well, no, actually it was only my grandma, who'd always say, wear clean underwear. Who wouldn't wear clean underwear? But I don't even totally get this. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Were you ever told that or heard it?
Oh, yeah,
wear
no.
Clean underwear. Well, I'd hope to.
Really? Why? Okay. I don't know why you haven't changed my head, but that's all right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't even know. Maybe they don't say it anymore after the thong was invented. I have no idea. But focus on this being your outfit. What do you want to share? Pick out your best outfit for the day. Don't be putting something out there that they won't. If you're at work, tools are going through. And this tool, I can go and connect my employees, which I did. And I put Click Media Agency, and I put people in there, and it's already populating their clout score, how strong they are on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. And don't you think that's kind of invasive?
Well, yeah.
Maria, would you like that?
No, I don't think so.
I love it.
Why do you
absolutely
love it?
Absolutely love it.
Well, I guess for business, it's great. But I was thinking in a thought of what if you are a private person, but then again, don't put your stuff out there if you are, correct?
Well, another thing you can say is if you've been so private, if you don't clean this up and your company ends up looking at this, and because Microsoft said what matters is your influence, your
right.
leadership, and hidden talents. And if we can highlight your influence, your leadership, and your hidden talents within the company, you'll stay.
Absolutely.
So you'll even work harder for the company at a lower rate.
That would be a great thing for us to do with Four, then, correct?
Oh, it's going to be phenomenal because we can help each other and grow it because almost the majority of the people in our Four care about their influence in helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a phenomenal tool that we can go and explore. And I was testing it out throughout this afternoon, and it kind of looks like a Facebook meets a Google Plus. And because it has some social tools in there, it lets us also cross share posts, tell people what we're doing, what the marketing team's doing with maybe the sales team, or for our situation, who's handling which causes, and to support each other.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's great, but that's how we are. If I was at McDonald's, and you have the management teams, and then you have managers and regional managers, but then you have the cashier. I wouldn't really like my kids signing up their Facebooks and Twitter accounts.
Right.
Because I actually think it would not be good because I do not think that they would say, I am always wanting to be a cashier.
Right. Exactly.
And I mean, there are people out there, but I'm just like, my kids, no. One in particular would probably eat the McDonald's out of any profit.
You've got 1 minute before we got to close up. So 1 minute.
Go and check Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan. We have some tools. We have some of the software that we just talked about. We're going to be talking more about some of the leadership. And today I go and say, watch your leadership. Figure out how you dress and start engaging. And if you can do something by tomorrow, come on in. Like Women on the Edge, and if you know of some interesting tools that you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you. So thank you guys for listening, and I love you, Maria, our phenomenal producer, and we're looking forward to Four International and taking this to the next level.
We will see you next week, and Becky, again, thank you so much for choosing Soul Sister Radio to have Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan. So thank you again, and we will see you next week on Soul Sister Thursday.
Soul Sister Radio. Hello, Soul Sister listeners. If you're learning and receiving from what you're being fed here on Soul Sister Radio, return the love by becoming a monthly partner of this station via sponsorship, monetary gifts, or as a Soul Sister advertiser. Thank you for your support. Soul Sister Radio.